center. Racing back to Lucci. Still going back into Death Valley. It goes right over his glove. He missed it. But Ruben Rivero missed second base. Now he's heading for third, and they're going to throw him out by plenty. But the throw to third is Bott. Now he's heading home. The loose ball in the infield. And he's out by 5 feet at the plate. And that was the worst base running in the history of the game.
Now back to KNBR's Giants postgame. You're talking baseball with Marty Lurie on The Sports Leader.
Did John capture it well?
Hey, John has had so many great calls in his illustrious career, but that right there is one of my favorites. This makes me laugh.
Great pull by Raph right there. That a boy, Raph.
Very good. All right, dramatic moments. Give me, Bill, you could start this one.
I'm going to go right into the 1982 last game when Joe Morgan hit the home run. If you're talking about a dramatic moment, that was huge. That was my rookie year. I had started that game, and it was just back and forth. And, of course, the Braves had already won. So if the Dodgers were going to beat us, they were going to win the division. And, of course, we beat them in a dramatic fashion. And that was probably one of the hugest points of my rookie year, even though I had a great rookie year. But that was one way to finish it. And then watching the Dodgers have to come through our clubhouse because everybody was jumping on the field when we won the game. And watching Tommy with his head down walking through was a sight I'll never forget.
Mm. Well?
Yeah, well, we've had so many here in San Francisco, and they, you know, most of them revolve around the World Series because it just doesn't get any better than that. You mentioned, Hunter Pence's boches and Hunter Pence's speech in Cincinnati when we're down 0-2. Just the feeling how relaxed and how everybody it just changed the mood to go out and play that ball game. And you're down 0-2, you got pressure. We have to win. Everything was lifted off our shoulders, and to go out there and win that game, I just think that carried us so far at that point. But that was dramatic. And the other dramatic moments obviously have to do with the greatest hitter I've ever seen play was Barry Bonds. When he was passing Babe Ruth and Hank Aaron and setting the 71, passing 71 home runs in the season, it's so dramatic because there's the anticipation of it's going to happen. These other moments that we live, big games that you're involved in, you're in the moment, and they turn out to be very dramatic, a matchup with an at-bat. But the anticipation that I think we all felt when Barry was passing these guys with the home runs was something special that we're all fortunate to had a part in to be able to watch that and to feel it and live that. So those come to mind, his great home runs.
This is the anniversary of the game against the Marlins where I think it was Jack McKeon walked him 4 intentional walks to Barry Bonds in 9 innings. That's never happened before in the history of baseball.
Well, Marty, and everybody talked about, talking to advanced scouts when he was that good. McKeon did the right thing. You take Barry out of the game because he was that darn good. And you talk about records that will probably never be broken. I'm jumping ahead here. But, Barry, besides the home runs, he did something that no other player's ever done. He walked 232 times in a single season, and he actually led the league in walks 3 years, not in a row, but 3 different years, 232, 198, and 177. And the only other player that has come close to him in walks in a season was the great Babe Ruth with 170. So he had 60 more, which that tells you just how great of a player he was, and I don't think that record will be broken myself as well.
Mm, that's a good one. That's a good one. All right, let's talk about records, though. For you, being around baseball, and, of course, Bonds did break Aaron's record. Bill, I'll let you start with this one. Record that you never thought would be broken that got broken?
Well, I wanted to make sure I did it right. I knew the back-to-back no-hitters, and it was Johnny Vandermeer's, and I looked it up a little bit on break, and I was seeing if anybody else came close, and then I remembered Max Scherzer had a no-hitter, and then threw a one-hitter right after that. And earlier than that, Dave Steeb had a second no-hitter, broke up into two outs in the ninth inning, or he would have had back-to-back no-hitters. So, I mean, that record right there is difficult. We talked about Nolan Ryan. He's in there, too, with seven no-hitters. But as a pitcher, to go out there and no-hit a team is just phenomenal for 27 outs. And you have to have luck, as they always say. You have to have that great grab or a great one-hand flip or something like that where the energy flows with the game. But, you know, when you look at Johnny Vandermeer throw a no-hitter back-to-back, that just – and that was on 4 days rest. That was the other thing. So that one stands out to me, and it's always stood out to me, but I did a little research to find out if anybody even came close and found out a couple names that I do remember.
Yeah, that's a good one. Let's
see.
Back Eckersley, when Dennis Eckersley threw a no-hitter, I think his next start, he went like six or seven innings of no-hit ball. I think I remember that for when Eck was young. Then there was a pitcher in the late 40s who was one of the best. Remember the name Yul Blackwell? They called him the Whip, and he was Don Drysdale before Don Drysdale. And I think he threw a no-hitter, and then he was going to throw a second no-hitter, and he went to, I think it's two out in the ninth inning. Sam Spear probably knows this, two out in the ninth inning. And I think Eddie Stanky hit a ball up the box and went right between his legs for a base hit up at the center field and cost him his second no-hitter. But, yeah, the two no-hitters, that's a tough one. But what about a record that was broken? Did you ever think that anyone would have as many hits as Ty Cobb or throw as many consecutive scoreless innings as Walter Johnson and Hershiser broke that record and broke Drysdale's record? There's some that you say it can't happen, and then all of a sudden it does happen. And I think maybe Rose breaking Cobb's record for me is I never thought anyone would get that many hits.
Yeah, Marty. Well, you've been around. You've been around to watch these things go. You know, I think about, you know, coaching and playing, and, you know, I really didn't think about the records all that much, other than the one record that was always, because I wasn't really looking at stats and all those types of things, but the one record that stood out to me was the Cal Ripken, you know, games played, because when we broke into the game, Bill will tell you that, you know, we had our rookie ball manager sat us down and told us a Wally Pipp story, and it's your job to hold down and don't ever take a day off, and, you know, that's how we wanted to approach the game. And to see Cal do that was just simply amazing. And I don't think that'll ever be broken again. And then to your point, you mentioned Pete Rose. Anything that has longevity and that amount of hits, to kind of put that in perspective, he had 4,256 hits. Right. The next closest player to him is Pujols. And he's 39 years old, and he's still 1,000 hits away from Pete Rose. So he'd have to have 5 200 hit seasons if he plays five more years as a DH to get it done. And I guess it's possible, but not likely, because you had players like Minnie Minoso and Satchel Paige playing to their 50s, right?
Whoa,
I mean,
wow.
Oh my goodness.
Well,
there you
go. You're going to need a new open here. This is, you're more than Mr. Helper now. Wow.
Well,
you're the professor.
I tell you one stat that, you know, when we were playing in the 80s, Lou Brock with the stolen bases, I thought no one would be able to even catch him. And then Ricky, of course, catches him. And I don't think that will ever be broken, because the stolen base is kind of pushed away from baseball now. And, you know, watching Lou Brock and how quick he was and how fast he was and stealing bags left and right as a child, watching him play and then getting to watch it toward the end of his career. But that's one, when I started watching Ricky, I kind of said, this guy's just as good. But when he broke the record, that was amazing to me. I thought that was one record that I would never be broken.
That's a very good. Well, who's the best base stealer you ever saw?
Well, you know, I mean, we played the Cardinals. I mean, I wasn't in the big leagues a long, long time to watch them, but you know, the Cardinals, when I was in Pittsburgh and we played the Cardinals with, you know, Vince Coleman, I mean, you couldn't stop him. I think more recently, probably Juan Pierre was one of those guys that that you couldn't stop. I don't know what his final numbers were, but those are two players that come to mind right off the bat.
Good. Doug Greenwald, of course, Hank's son, just sent me a text and said Ichiro breaking George Sisler's record of 256 hits, I think, or something like that in the season, and Ichiro went it above 260. That's a record. That for me, that could be one I'd say would never be broken, and Ichiro broke it. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah.
Ichiro is a heck of a player.
Yeah, he was. I'll never forget the home run he hit off in that All-Star game. I do believe it was Pac Bell or ATT, whatever the name it was, but that just took my attention right off of it, going, how did somebody do that? He's never even played here, but yet he hit that archway and it bounced in, inside the park home run. That was fabulous for that All-Star game.
Did you see that, Will?
That was the All-Star game in San Francisco he's referring to, correct?
Yeah, where he hit it off the yeah.
Yeah, you know what? That's probably one thing at that point. I was asked to stay and work the game and throw batting practice. And back then I had a house up at Donner Lake, and I took the 3 days off and went up to the lake and missed the All-Star game. And I don't even think I saw it on TV. So that must have been quite a moment. That's one regret I had. I wish I was there to see that.
Yeah,
that was. So, Ron, you did the All-Star thing then, huh? You got done with your work, you took your shower and got out of there, huh?
Well, no, yeah. Well, I wasn't part of it, you know. They asked me to throw batting practice, and, well, they had plenty of arms, so I said I chose not to do it. And look, it's lengthened my career. I could still throw a little bit now, so it's worked out for me.
You know, it's funny. I asked you this week about the last time that a pitcher actually threw batting practice, and, well, you said it, you don't even remember that happening. And, Bill, I'll ask you the same question. You remember pitchers throwing batting practice?
We did that back in the early 80s. We did that when we had a hard struggle inning. You only went one or two innings. They made you go out and throw live pitching, live hitters, you know, live pitching to live hitters just to get you back into the strike zone to get better location, because that was most of the time when you got lit up, you didn't throw many pitches. And that was some of the things we did as pitchers between starts instead of just throwing it on the side. They let you throw. Of course, you had your L screen in front of you, but yet you got on the mound to get that bad feeling or bad taste out of your mouth from that last outing. And it worked sometimes. Of course, you didn't throw that many pitches, so it really didn't bother you in between starts. They don't do that at all anymore.
No, Marty, we were talking about it, Bill, and, you know, the thing that strikes me today, and it's gone by the wayside, but the last 5 years is, you know, there were simulated games. Obviously, when a pitcher comes back, you throw to hitters. You know, when I was in the big leagues, I was always the guy that had to go out and hit, because I was one of the young guys, right? The veterans aren't going to go hit off the rehab pitcher throwing at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. But it's really interesting to me, you mentioned the L screen, because, yeah, you know, in the last 5 to 8 years, pitchers don't choose to use the L screen in spring training or in a simulated game, and they're at risk of getting hit with a line drive back at him. And I'll tell you what, it happened to Armando Benitez. We were in San Francisco. Remember, Armando was pitching for us. Mm-hmm. And we couldn't find a hitter to hit off him because we had some guys hurt. We didn't want to make the veterans do it. So our two hitting coaches said they would hit off him, and it was Willie Upshaw and it was Joe LaFay. And Joe LaFay was the head hitting coach, and Upshaw was his partner. So he was going to throw one inning, simulated game. And those guys went out there, and they were talking smack to each other. We're going to get you. And they really wanted to hit the guy, and Armando says, oh, you're not going to hit anything. And a long story short, Joe LaFay hit a line drive right off Armando Benitez's kneecap because he didn't have that screen. And you're right. I mean, I've seen so many pitchers get hit with line drives, but yet we don't do that today. The pitchers are uncomfortable with the L screen out there.
Mm. Didn't Kane? Well, I think, didn't we see Kane get hit a couple of times in spring?
Probably so. Like I said, I've seen a number of pitchers get hit without the L screen. But, you know, Bill, you could speak more to that. I mean, I guess it does hinder you a little bit, and guys don't worry about getting the ball back at them.
Yeah, and what the listeners do, when you see that, when batting practice pitchers throw, there's an L screen, which means the screen is shaped like an L shape. So if you're right-handed, you get into the hole, and then you pull down behind the screen as the balls can come through that hole real quick. But as live pitchers, you literally have to watch out how far it is in front of you, because you literally could hit the post if you don't get it over that pole. So it's difficult at times, but I tell you what, there's no way I'm going to do that with live hitting when you're throwing batting practice, like you're saying, or a rehab start. It saves your life because balls come back at you so fast, and we all know that. There's been so many injuries and line drives off heads and body parts, and every pitcher gets hit. So it is a protection mode, but at the same time, I don't see why guys do that. There's more injury-ridden ways of getting hurt that way than putting an L-screen and protecting yourself.
Boy, I'll mention one name, and it's amazing. Both of you guys know him, John Yandle. He's been batting. Come on, this guy's been a batting practice pitcher for the Giants for 35 years. Mm-hmm. How about that?
He's amazing, and he's been through a rotator cuff surgery, and he still flies out and does it. And for years, you know, his nickname was Cutter John. And about 6 years ago, you know, some of the old school people still call him Cutter John, but you know, some of the John didn't like that name, and the new players and the new regime instead of calling him Cutter John, they changed his name to Strike Force. Because he shows up every day, and he'll throw for a half hour, and he is simply amazing. Now, John Yandle has done a tremendous job, and most people know him by it. He was Barry Bonds' BP guy. I mean, I've thrown to Barry a number of times, but Cutter, I still call him Cutter, he was the guy that would throw to Barry every day, and Barry loved hitting off of him, and they were a great team.
Yeah, and Ron, there's an art. There's really an art of throwing batting practice. If you can get in the zone, you can throw it strike after strike. But there's days when I just don't understand how that guy could do it every day. And like you said, in the strike zone every day with something on it, on a corner, and throwing strike after strike. It is a difficult feat to do as a pitcher. And to do the longevity as he has, that tip your hat to a guy like that. And I'm sure all your coaches love him out there, too, to give you guys an arm rest.
Oh, he's great. He's great. You're always looking for a left-handed thrower, and he's able to do it. And of course, so, Bill, we don't throw back from the dirt like they used to in BP. We move that screen so close to the hitter that you think the L screen's protecting the hitter, not the pitcher. That's how close I put it when I'm throwing.
Veteran move.
Yeah, Yandle told me that he warms up in the parking garage down in San Jose. He's a realtor, and he throws against the wall. To warm up. That's the way he would warm up.
Yeah.
What an amazing story. Amazing story. Hey, this May 6th is Willie Mays' 89th birthday, and of course everyone wishes him well and just an amazing man. But my question to you guys is, first time you ever met Willie Mays, and what'd you think? And everyone who's ever met him has had that experience. How about for you guys? Bill, you go.
Well, I think the first time I met him, of course, childhood, you knew all about him, World Series and you know, the All-Stars and all the different accolades. But his hands, when I shook his hand was such a large hand and firm grip. And I love that. And when you find a good handshake and you're looking down and his hand is like twice the size of my hand, and I got large hands. But that was the first thing that I remember about Willie Mays when I met him, was shaking his hand. And such a phenomenal person, even today. I mean, he'd speak to you, Bill, sit down and talk. You know, he's just a phenomenal guy. And all the accolades about what his career was, and you're sitting there chatting with him, and you kind of walk away, and you're just like, I just spoke to Willie Mays, you know. And those are those childhood heroes that, you know, we talk about when you're growing up watching them and playing. And he was that guy for me. I when somebody said San Francisco, that was the guy that came out of my mouth immediately. And to meet him and greet him and take pictures with him, it was a lifetime award in my own mind.
Yeah, Willie, when I came over to the Giants, of course, not having the history with them until I started working for the organization, you know, there's a few people in the game. And, you know, I mean, Willie's name obviously is at the top of the list. I mean, he's quoted in more movies and the greatest player of all time. All you hear about is Willie Mays. So just to see him out there on the field with the Giants the first time and being around them, you're in awe. You really are. And then when you have a chance to talk to him, and I'll say the same thing Bill did. What struck me was his hands, how strong his hands were on his handshake. So it's interesting, you know, you know he's a ball player, the greatest of all time, and you shake his hand, and that comes to both our minds is the handshake. So, yeah, what a great guy to have around, and we wish him happy birthday, that's for sure.
Yeah, first time I met him, I couldn't believe I was meeting him. I mean, that was the thing, you know. It was like the baseball card came to life, you know. The baseball card started talking. And then getting to know him, I like when he tells stories about after he had retired, people like Kevin Mitchell and, you know, people would challenge him. Willie, you can't hit. You can't do this. And he would just, you guys remember this? He would just get in the box and just crush the ball. And that's what he would do.
You know, the things that they did in the early 80s were those old-timer games, and he played in them. And I remember him. He still went out in center field and played and still basket-catched everything. And, you know, he was putting a show on. And that's what was great about those old-timer games a lot. Juan Marichal went out there and threw. Willie Mack was playing first. Davey was out there. And those were the moments I remembered in the early 80s watching all those old-timer games. And I don't know why they stopped doing them. Those are cool things that they should throw out there for the fans.
I like them. Whoa, you like an old-timers game?
Yeah, you know, I've never been involved with one, but I didn't spend enough time in the big leagues. But I agree with Bill. You know, we do so many great events at the ballpark and reunions and everything for the fans. I'm surprised we don't have old-timers games at our ballpark. I can't remember the last time we had. I remember we were in Arizona playing the Diamondbacks, and they had an old-timers game. And Bam Bam, I remember we got beat that day, and then like a half hour after the game, you know, they were going to have an old-timers game, and then Bam Bam showed up in his changed uniforms and put his Diamondback uniform on and went out there. And it's kind of fun. You know, I sat out there and watched the guys play a little bit, and I think the ex-players and enjoy watching those things as much as the fans do, because you get to see the guys back on the field, and it's always a great event.
Yeah, for me, there's that one moment, that tenth of a second when you see that move that they have that reminds you that was them. And it's Bob Feller comes to mind for me. You know, he had that very distinctive windup and the big leg kick and everything else. And you could just see it for a tenth of a second. That was Bob Feller. And that's what I like. That's what I like about old timers game. Well, you mentioned Bam Bam. Have you been in touch with Bam Bam? I wonder how he's doing. I saw a picture of him on the internet. I know he's doing a tremendous job down in Curacao with the coronavirus and food and all that kind of stuff. Have you been in touch with him at all?
Yeah, we talked briefly. I mean, he's doing well, as you said. He's trying to help the island with the coronavirus, with food banks and helping getting food to the island, because it's just like Hawaii. You know, when you have a virus like this, it can wipe out the whole island, you know, and they want to make sure that, you know, everything's closed down, the beaches, the businesses, and it's hard on those people, on anybody in an island, because whether it's Hawaii or Curacao or other islands, you know, tourism is where they make their money and make their livelihood, and without that, they're all going through a rough time. But so Bam Bam, you know, in his homeland of Curacao, helping out with that the best he can, of course, keeping his family safe. We know he has a big family, so he's doing well.
Okay.
That's good.
All right. Well, that's a Saturday night. Boy, this is incredible baseball talk. It really is. I appreciate all the time. And I just think we cover so much ground. Isn't it amazing what a game this is and how many tangents you could go off on and all the things you can talk about?
I tell you, it's like a spider web, Marty. As you start talking about something and it just enlarges, and we go into another avenue, but the avenue is all about baseball and the memories and talk about different things, from Ron being in the World Series and things of that magnitude. Just those are remarkable stories. That's what I'm like you, Marty, when Ron starts talking about all the things that happened during an All-Star game or a World Series. I'm all ears, and I love listening to that kind of baseball. And I appreciate Ron doing those little one-on-one with us, Marty, about some of the things that he did. But baseball's baseball. We all miss it, and we can't wait to see it get started again.
Yeah, more stories. Well, we need more stories, right?
More stories. You know what? We don't have the games going on right now, so it's really nice to be able to think about these situations and the great players in the sport, and it just makes you want to get out there, you know? I mean, we're supposed to be out there in the field. We're supposed to be watching games this time of year, I guess this is the next best thing for now, but hopefully we'll get things moving here soon.
All right. You guys have a great week, and be safe, and we'll talk to you next week. Take care.
Yeah, thanks, Marty.
All right,
thanks,
guys.
Ron. Hey, make sure you put that air conditioning on, Marty.
Hey,
see you guys later.
If it's under 90, I'm okay. All right, take care. All right, well, take care. Thank you. All right. That's Ron Wotus and Bill Lasky.